This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za. Power Breakfast with TT. Weekdays 6 to 9 a.m. on Power 98.7.
Don't forget our Power Voices competition coming up in this hour. I've got a fantastic hamper up for grabs for you in that competition as the winning continues as we celebrate 8 years of Power 98.7. But let's do this first. So we know that South Africa has one of the highest youth unemployment rates in the world. A whopping 63% of young people between the ages of 15 and 24 years in this country are jobless. And a large proportion of these young people have never worked in the formal economy. Media frequently portray young people excluded from wage or work as inactive, aimless, and alienated from mainstream society. This image feeds into fears of crime, violence, and social unrest, in which people who are jobless are cast as a ticking time bomb that poses a threat to a country's stability. These are the observations then made in a study about the stereotyping of young people in this country, and that says it is wrong. Let's speak to Dr. Hannah Dawson, senior researcher at the Southern Center for Inequality Studies at the Wits University. Good morning to you, Dr. Hannah, and thank you very much for your time.
Morning, Tabiso, and to your listeners. Thanks, thanks for having me.
It is incredible how a certain way of thinking, a mindset, can take root and actually take on a truism that we now believe that those that are unemployed or are finding themselves outside of the job market, are some kind of ticking time bomb, as we call it, ready to explode. You say this is a wrong perception. What is the reality? Or maybe let's talk about what feeds into that, where it came from.
No, I mean, I think you're right to say how widespread this view is. And also, it's one that's been around for a long time, and you see it in other parts of the world. So there's this idea that anyone that is not employed in a kind of formal sector job is somehow the cause of social disorder. So we have this real focus on a job being the basis of not just a good society, but a good person in a sense. There's this deep moralization. And in a country like South Africa, when we have, the latest unemployment statistics are really shocking at the number of people, and in particular young people, out of employment. But this is also not a new phenomenon. We've known that large numbers of people are not formally employed. And the question is, what are they doing? And my work and others shows that this idea that if you are outside of waged work, you're somehow sitting around doing nothing is profoundly untrue. It can't be the case that if you have nothing, you can do nothing. And part of what I'm trying to do in this study is to make more visible what it is people do who have very little to hustle to make a life for themselves.
And let's talk about what you actually did find out there, because you you did your research at in Zandspruit. I know who are the sort of people you interacted with, and what are the kind of stories, and what did you learn about young people who find themselves unemployed?
So I should say I've been doing research in Zandspruit and with young people, although when you've been working in Zandspruit for 10 years, not everyone is as young as myself included as I was 10 years ago. But in more recent years, I've been trying to understand people's work trajectories and histories, and a variety of things show up. But the main one is that large numbers of young people either just don't have work, or what's much more common is that people get short stints in the formal economy. So, kind of when we talk about gig work now, we all think about Uber drivers. But really, most young people are working in short types of work, which you could call a gig, even if it's not on a digital platform. But because of that, most people are doing many, many different things to make a living. So forms of informal employment, But also things, as I show in that article, that we don't excuse me, we don't think about as unemployment. So forms of kind of sharing resources. I talk about this one car wash stand that we think often, I'm sure many of your listeners, this won't be a new idea, but you know, we think of it as a standalone business. But actually, when you spend time at a car wash stand, you realize there are lots of different informal businesses happening there. The car wash stand is connected to lots of other kinds of informal money-making activities, but also is the space of friendship, which is how, in an economy where you might have work this week and you might not next week, this creates the basis of people actually helping each other out. Mm. That's not just about the family supporting young people, but actually it's about peer networks.
Yeah. You know, what I found quite compelling is what you were saying there, really, about doing nothing really actually isn't an option for people who are in these communities, who are young people who are unemployed, because it's not as if they do nothing, there will be money coming from somewhere else. Quite often they come from homes where nobody else works.
Exactly. And we have this perception that the only valuable or the only productive type of activity is when we see someone kind of leaving our community and getting on a taxi to go somewhere, then it's work, right?
Yeah.
But anything that doesn't look like that, somehow we don't classify, we don't actually recognize the effort involved in hustling a life or trying to put something on the table. And this looks different for men and women. It looks slightly different for older versus younger people. But I just think there's so much work that is actually being done just to try and get by day to day that we completely invisibilize. Mm. And that's part of what I'm trying to make, you know, bring to the fore a little.
Yeah. And talk to me about the language that is used amongst young people who are in this position, those not in employment, no, in education and training, the so-called NEET group that you interacted with. What is the kind of language that they speak of? I mean, I know that, we talk a lot in our communities, in township communities, you hear young people talking about, the hustle, as you just the word that you use, or hupanda, as they call it. But it also takes on a negative connotation in the sense that the hustle normally is like a fine line between a hustle and doing something illegal.
I mean, sure, I think it's interesting how the language of, I mean, of course, Zandspruit is very diverse in terms of the languages that people speak. Mm. So that also complicates it. It's not like everyone is speaking isiZulu. So there's quite a diverse array of language and words that people use. I mean, hustling has become a kind of dominant one. Mm. And what's fascinating is, you know, if you look in parts of East Africa, you know, hustling to the US, to all over the African continent, the word hustle kind of historically meant kind of, and it still has this connotation, somehow being involved in some kind of illicit, illegal criminal activity. Mm. But then you see people in kind of white collar jobs who kind of doing a side hustle, and it means something quite different. So the word hustle is kind of one that captures quite a lot. The other word that was used a lot in that I hear friends and people in Zandspruit talking about is shortcuts, which also has, I think, this connotation of illegality.
Yes.
Now, I don't want to deny that some of the strategies people do to get by might involve some dimension of illegality or what we might perceive to be that way. Mm. But there's a whole host which is not clearly criminal or illegal, but is a crucial part of, as I said, having something on the table, but also being able to make life slightly more enjoyable. So the space of the car wash, what I was also trying to show, is a space of friendship, of solidarity, and a form of reciprocity. People share resources, even if that's to share a crate of beers. You know, that is how you're trying to build a set of networks on which you can support yourself if you don't have a salary coming in on the 21st.
You write about this big communal living where, you know, you as you put it here, you are not going to starve when you have friends.
I mean, exactly. You don't want to romanticize this either. I mean, that's the important part, right? We know, especially in the context of COVID, I mean, many households, many communities are in incredible financial distress. And these informal systems of kind of making sure, you know, your neighbor has something, you know, are under profound stress. But I think it is just true that that these informal systems of sharing, of communal living, as, you know, I quoted someone in Zandspet who referred to it like that, are essential. And but they don't happen without effort. So this is, again, the thing of, let's think about the work that goes into building those social relationships. You can't take. If you haven't given at some point, it's very hard to take, you know. So it's also saying these systems of reciprocity, again, require work. Okay. Yeah. You shouldn't underestimate them.
I'm talking to Dr. Hannah Dawson, a senior researcher at the Southern Center for Inequality Studies at Wits University, talking about this work that she's been doing, research into the attitudes that exist towards or the stereotyping about young jobless South Africans that suggest that they're this ticking time bomb or that they are doing nothing. That this is actually misguided and is wrong. I wonder also what your studies found in terms of the attitudes of young people who are outside of the job, who are unemployed, this cohort that you were researching. In terms of their attitudes towards formal employment, you know, one of the things that was a feature certainly growing up in the 80s and 90s was, in the township, you were almost seen as a bit of a fool for having a menial job that you have to go and do a 9-to-5 that pays you very little compared to that guy who hustles or pandas, who manages to somehow afford a nice car, you know. So what is their attitude towards formal employment and towards programs that the government speaks of about, this township economy?
No, I mean, you're asking very good questions. And these are complicated matters. Mm. You know, my wider work, project I've been working in for many years, you know, challenges the idea that any job is better than no job. Mm. The work I've done and others shows that when you look closely at, in particular, young people's job decision making, it's very clear that, you know, just any job that's going to pay you any amount for any number of days, a kind of peace job, is really actually, in many young people's view, just not worth it. Mm. That's often because that work is demeaning. People view it as below them. But often it pays so little that once you've, you know, taken transport costs out, you're left with nothing. And then you have black tax on top. So I think it's important to say that I think all the research shows that young people desperately want formal, decent, permanent work. Mm. The reality is that our economy hasn't been creating those types of jobs at scale for a long time. So there's a disconnect between the types of jobs young people desire and want and the types of jobs the economy is creating. Mm. And so young people are selective in the types of jobs they are
willing to do.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And there is this perception, you know, if I can hassle, you know, get 500 rand in one day doing this, you know, why should I, you know, work in a grocery store?
Yeah, packing bags, yeah. Dr. Hannah, just stay with me on the line. I just want to bring in Peggy, and Rodi Port wants to weigh in here. Go ahead, Peggy. Good morning.
Good morning, Titi. Good morning to the doctor. Thank you so much. Very fascinating study.
Absolutely.
That one. Because if you remember, Titi, for the past 8 years or so, people like Zweli Zimavavi have been actually saying that unemployment in the youth sector is actually a ticking time bomb. You know, it's that narrative has been there for the past 8 years or so. But if you look at it, the government, I think, has been clever in other instances, in my view. For instance, the 350 grant, in my view, is also a neutralizer. I think there's been some kind of neutralizers in a way. But it's very much fascinating, and I would be happy if you can share a link so that one can actually dip into the details.
Absolutely.
Of the study. But beautiful study there. Congratulations to the doctor.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Peggy. I couldn't agree with you. We certainly will share a link, or we'll get the doctor to tell us where we can access that one. 0861987000. Chatting. Oh, in fact, we're just about out of time. But let's then expand, just to round off our conversation then, in terms of Where do we go then? I mean, I think one of the things that you say in your report there, you say the growing insecurity of jobs in the formal economy highlights the urgency of stronger social protection and income support for young people. As Begi just made reference to that grant, the 350, well, which is no longer there. Is that the route to go then? More social grants and more social support for young people out of work, because some, of course, don't qualify anymore for the child grant. But what is the approach to go, bearing in mind the stretched resources of government at this stage?
My view is that there's never going to be one solution to this problem, and we need to think specifically about what young people need, which requires many things. And then the bigger question is, what do we do with the high levels of unemployment in South Africa? My view is that we need our economy to be growing and to be kickstarted and to be producing good jobs, decent jobs, in as many numbers as we can. The reality is that even if our economy was growing again at kind of 8% like it was back in 2005-06, we are never going to create enough jobs for the majority of South Africa's population to be in employment. So even if we can create as many jobs as possible, that's not going to include everyone. And so my view is that we absolutely have to put the creation of jobs on the table, but it's not enough. And that's why I preface the importance of strong social protection or income support for young people, what we often refer to as a basic income grant. Just because the type of job that provides the security to build a life is really not available anymore. Even if you look at the types of gig jobs that the digital economy is creating, you have work today and you don't have work the next day. So people need a basic level of income security that you then use to build a more kind of economically viable life. So it's, stronger social protection is one of a number of key interventions we need. But I do think it's a really important one. And it also actually makes possible this idea that young people should all be entrepreneurs without giving, in the context where they have no capital, and I don't just mean, financial capital, but also the skills and the networks to really make that viable. A cash injection at a regular interval has also been shown, if you look at all the research, to really help build local economies. But you can't just assume that that will come kind of from nowhere without putting some resources into those economies. And this is one way to do that.
You know what? This has been a most fascinating discussion. And thank you very much, Dr. Dawson, and for your, and also for this fabulous work that you've done in this matter, that you're doing in this on this subject. I think this has really given a whole new perspective to how we view the unemployed young people of this country. For the benefit of Peggy and others who would like to read more and actually take a closer look at the report that you've put together, or the study that you put together, how do they access it?
So the article that you were quoting at the beginning is available online. It's freely accessible on The Conversation. And the title is, the beginning of it is Stereotypes About Young Jobless South Africans Are Wrong. And then the link to the actual academic article is in the text. But, that piece gives you a quick summary. And if you follow the link, you will get to the academic article.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for this. I've really found this fascinating and enjoyed hearing about it. Thank you very much for your time this morning.
Thanks, Tobiso. Bye.
That's Dr. Hannah Dawson of Wits University there. Wow. Doesn't that just give you a whole new take on this whole thing, youth unemployment and this ticking time bomb that we so love to reference, especially us here in the media? And I'd like to hear your thoughts around the idea of, is any job better than no job at all? I'd like to get your thoughts, especially if you're a young person. You may be employed or unemployed, or you've had the experience of not being employed. Better is no job, any job better than no job at all? Let's have that conversation as well in the time we have remaining. And a competition is still coming up. Let's get to the latest news headlines.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za. or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.